It's Monday night. The shark pool has been baited. The spit is turning over a crackling flame, and there's a carcass to be roasted. Deep breaths, folks. It's the Day Trippers. Show, we exhume the corpse of the game that was Hull City vs Liverpool and serve up another autopsy of this most rotten of cadavers. Don't worry, we're fully qualified. Aiding us in our CSI-like examination will be Dr. Dan Shepherd, aka at Liverpool Deep. As this may get a bit grim, we'll lighten the mood with the first of our new features, the snappily titled Phil and Steve's Magical Transfer Rumour Roundabout, for which we'll be joined by one of the kings of transfer gossip, that's at MoleyBTK, formerly known as the Anfield Mole. We then look forward, if that's possible, to Norwich on Wednesday, and the Anfield celebrations to mark the return of King Stuart of West Ham on Saturday. First, let's begin on an upbeat note with our last picks in our favourite all-time 11. It's the main men up top to round us off. It's time to talk about blokes and tashes, niños and God. So I want everyone to round out the team by filling in the last places up top and then give us a full rundown of your 11 just to wrap this up. Andy, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, so the last two players to make my team is Rushy and Fowler. Hardly need to state a case why. Two absolute legends. So they make the top for me. So do you want me to give you the whole team?
Run it down, Andy.
Right, if I can remember. Reina. Then I have three at the back. It was Hansen, Hippia and Carragher. In the middle of the park, I have Gerrard and Moby. Left-hand side, Johnny Barnes. Right-hand side, Steve McManaman. In behind the strikers, Dalglish and Rushy and Fowler.
It's a lovely, lovely team. Steve Brown.
I've hemmed and hawed, and I still haven't made a choice on who's going to start as the centre forward of my team. It's between the three players that I've seen play: Fowler, Torres, and Suarez.
Steve, I don't like to point this out, mate, but this is the night in which you have to call this.
Right.
It'd be handy if you could call it tonight, given that we've got fucking to go through our 11 as well.
Right, I'm going to go for Fowler.
Excellent. Right, go on, go through your full 11 then.
Reina, Babel at right back, Carragher and Hippie at Rob Jones, Mascherano and Gary McAllister, and then Steve McManaman, Gerrard, Barnes and Fowler.
Oh, lovely stuff. Phil, give us yours.
I just pick up the paper, which I haven't written anything down on. I'm going to go, for me, it's Fowler. I sort of messed around with the idea of Torres because he was just a phenomenon when he was with us. Let's be honest. I know he fucked off to Chelsea and everything, but he was just a phenomenon. And then we had Rushy as well, and boy, Jays, the boy could score. But in terms of just an incredible goal-scoring machine, Robbie Fowler had it all. The left foot, the right foot, the headers. He had the blunderbusses from outside the boxes. He had ridiculously quick hat-tricks. He had the repertoire. And for a fella that wasn't even that tall, the amount of headers he scored was ridiculous. Now, I said last week I had Suarez to play in the 9.5. Yeah, well, Fowler's playing in the 9.5 as well, because the one thing about them is they just interchange continuously. One would be up top, the other one could drop deep, and you just have that lovely fluidity between the two. I'd love to have a time machine just to get that front four that I've picked to fucking play together. McManaman, Barnes, Fowler and Suarez. That would just be just the best thing to watch in football.
That's lovely. Fill out the rest of it then for us.
So yeah, the team would have been Grobler, and then we had Steve Finnan obviously at right full, Hansen and Hoopia, Stevie Nicol at left, then we have Mascherano and Moby or Alonso that haven't made up my mind. Still haven't made up my mind.
You can't give Steve crap in the day.
And then we've got then the McManaman, Barnes, Suarez and Fowler.
Right, okay, that's very, very nice. Mine's a bit similar and a bit different. I've got Grobler in goal. I've got Babel right back. I've got Nicol left back. Hoopia and Carragher at the centre halves. Gerrard right, Barnes left, Souness holding the middle. Kenny I picked last week, and my front two are Rush and Fowler, because I mean, why the hell not? And that is just a spectacularly wonderful, gorgeous team. And I've
because I've got the microphone, I'm just going to say what I want to say, which is that I've got a special mention for my first sub, which is Yari Littman.
Yes!
Because I love Yari. So, that's about us for this feature. Hope you've enjoyed it. And
is that the end of the pod, is it?
That's the end of the pod. So, we'll see you next week. Okay, we'll move on to a review of Hull versus Liverpool, if we must. I think we can all agree it was as disappointing a result and performance as we've had under Brendan Rodgers. Probably the manager himself must bear a large amount of the blame there. The players, though, were hardly covering themselves in glory. And it was, quite frankly, pretty ugly. So where do we start? Andy, I'm going to start with you and ask you, what is the case for the defence?
That was absolutely shambolic. Defensive performance, the worst I've seen in a long time. And Rodgers got it completely wrong in bringing Toure into the team. He said before the game, you know, he thinks Toure is better equipped to deal with set pieces. Well, if that was the case, why didn't he play him against Lukaku last week? So I'm not buying that excuse at all. If he had Johnson marking Lukaku last week, why has he got Toure in this week? You know, and across the back four, I think Flanagan done okay, right? But the fella's limited, but he done okay. Johnson, I don't know what's going on. Like, we know what he's like defensively. You know, he has mistakes in him. But on the ball, the last couple of games, it's just shocking. His passes are so predictable. I mean, he's telegraphing them, like, you know what's coming. I mean, I think I heard one of the passes being announced across the tannoy in the ground before he gave it. It's that fucking bad. Skirtle, he's back to his old tricks again. He's too busy molesting strikers as opposed to looking after the ball. I seen it early on, the first 15 minutes, I think it was a corner. Davies kind of flicks it on, goes out, the ball swung back in, and he's a free header. At no stage is Skirtle really committed to challenging for the ball. He's only interested in pulling out the player.
He's attacking the corner. Did you see him pulling the jersey and man pulling him towards him?
I don't know what the fucking story is. When he's defending, when the goal, obviously that deflection is very unlucky, but he's 10-15 yards away from the ball. It's not going to fucking hurt you. Like, you know what I mean? If a player did that in a wall, you'd be absolutely snapping. But he turns his back. It was so cowardly looking, and he's a big mean looking fucker as well. Like, you don't expect that from Skirtle. Toure, Jesus Christ. Like, when I seen Toure when he signed for Liverpool, I thought it was great. I mean, it was an ideal thing to replace Carragher in the dressing room or whatever. But, I think he's limited. There's a reason why, you know, City have kind of pushed him on for nothing, you know. And when I seen him, the first time I kind of seen him playing for Liverpool properly was against Celtic. And I thought to myself, my Jesus, that fella doesn't look very mobile at all. I think he has arthritis.
Were they the words you used, Andy?
Yeah. I think he has arthritis in both his hips. And my ma has arthritis the last 30 years, so I'm experienced. I know what it looks like, and I've seen my ma cutting the grass with the arthritis, and that's what he looks like to me. Now, it's either that or he's had a double hip replacement or needs one, but he turns very, very poorly. Like, I've seen quicker turnarounds by the Stenaline and Holyhead. So, am I going over a bar?
No, not at all, mate. No, that's very measured. It's very listen,
Andy, come down off the ladder.
Listen, I want to ask you something specific about the defence. What did you make of Glenn Johnson's constant punting? And where in the hell did that come from? It looked like he got possessed by Enrique and his incredible diagonal pass.
I don't know what's happened to Johnson. As we're used to Johnson being excellent on the ball. Why all of a sudden are we seeing a Johnson that has forgotten how to play football?
It made no sense. It's not the same man. I was wondering, did you see anything? Do you think it's because was he carrying an niggle, he couldn't run with the ball, or what the hell's going on there?
Maybe he is. I don't know.
He did spend a week with Hodgson, though, remember?
That's gonna hurt anybody, I suppose.
Yeah, and just another, Toure, when he's down for the Toure goal, it's inexcusable, really. If you're injured, fair enough, but he's able to get back up, you know, so he's not that injured really, and he must, when he's sitting on the ground, he must see that he's playing Sagbo one side by 100 yards. So I don't know what the story was with the defence, and a player so experienced like Toure, it's the least you expect from him.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to you later on for your suggestions about what might happen in the future and what we should do from here on out. I know that Dan, our guest, and Steve have pretty much the same topic that they're going to talk about. So, Dan, as a guest, we'll bring you in first. You wanted to mention something about the forwards, the attack.
Yeah, well, it didn't work either, really, did it?
That sums it up, mate. That sums it up.
So, yeah, next. No.
Thanks for that, Dan.
That's what I'm here for.
That's why you're on the big bucks, fella. Go ahead.
It was patently obvious that Moses was having a dreadful game. Everyone was picking up on that straight away. But to be honest, there wasn't much to call between him, Suarez or Sterling. None of them really did anything. They all seem to have this idea that you could run through defenders and they'd somehow move out the way. Now, I know this sometimes works for Suarez, but when I've gone on about him in the past, what he can frustrate me is when he gets in one of those ruts of the game of just trying it every time and every time the attack breaks down. And he hasn't really been doing that recently since he's come back. He seems to have been a bit more clued up and he's thinking a bit more about when the right time is to do it. And to be honest, I can't blame him for it this week because he must have been thinking, well, I'm not going to pass it to Moses and I'm not going to pass it to Sterling. You know, I might as well run through this defender again. And so he started resorting to thinking, I've got to do everything myself because no one else is going to do it for me. If I pass it to anyone, we're going to lose it anyway. I think so that just created bad vibes around him. He probably wasn't really particularly, you know, having a great game either. Sterling tried running through people a few times. Moses tried everything but doing the right thing. And it would have been really easy to go on and talk about the midfield and the defence because I moan about the midfield every week and there's so many points you could bring up. And that for that third goal, there was a great, just going off topic a bit, there's a great gif going on, or gif, whichever way you want to pronounce it, on the net of that Dave Hendrick tweeted with basically from behind the goal, so you could see Torre sort of limping and holding onto the back of Skirtle, which he seemed to do for some reason. So there was this sort of gap. But you could also see Huddleston just doing the slowest jog in the world towards the penalty area. It's like sort of just sort of ambling towards the box. No one anywhere near him, no one picking him up. The camera sort of zooms out a little bit more and you can see sort of Gerrard about 30 foot to the left doing an even slower jog backwards. And then Lucas had sort of taken up a kind of weird left centre-back role, which was just like watching him run towards, thinking, well, no one's here, so I might as well go here. So there's kind of like Skirtle and Torre next to each other, and then Luke, and it's just a shambles. It's just, again, what's going on in that middle bit. But yeah, there's so many things you can say about that. The defence was bad, the midfield was bad, and the attack just was doing nothing either. So it's easily Rodgers' worst game. And
How much Dan can we lay at the feet of Rodgers there? Is he not entitled to point out the fact, and I think he has, in fairness to him, much to the amusement of others, is he not entitled to point out the fact that a lot of people had a bad day at the same time?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, you expect more from Moses. I mean, you know, he hasn't really offered as much since that game when he scored the goal, and past that he seemed to have got worse and worse and regressed backwards. I'm slightly worried that the same thing is going to happen with Flano as well, because it always seems to be that initial like burst of adrenaline, you get your chance and you play really well, and then when you get more consistent games in the team, that's when all the mistakes seem to creep in and everyone wants rid of that player. So I think perhaps that's happened to Moses. You see the same sort of thing happen to Sterling when he came in, and he hasn't really done much since. So the thing that's bothered me the most about Rodgers is I've been a massive defender of him all last season, and I'll continue to be so as well. And I don't think you can. I think the players really let him down the other day. But what's worrying me the most is that we seem to have kind of abandoned all that work we did last year towards playing a certain style in a certain way. It's almost as if doesn't believe in it himself anymore.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe we're accommodating Gerrard because it doesn't really suit him plays to his strengths more if we don't play that style, and Gerrard's got to play every game in the middle. And maybe there's a couple of other options. You can maybe get the best out of Suarez if you like the goal last year where he brought it down on his chest from above his head. If you don't play long balls, you don't get that out of him as well. And maybe he's thinking, I do need to mix up it, but I just think it's such a diversion from what we've spent all that time working on that's what I'm worried about the most. Why has he left it so much? There's no triangles the other day. There was never anyone near the player with the ball to pass to easily. There's these gaps in midfield. Surely he can see that playing Gerrard there next to Lucas isn't working.
Yeah, that's just it though, Dan, isn't it? He doesn't seem to say it. He seems to be the only one who doesn't say it. That seems to be the problem.
I don't know whether he has to play Gerrard there. I can't imagine being able to say to not, and I don't think he should drop Gerrard. I mean, I've been an advocate of him not playing in that position because I can't see how you can ever get a nice, balanced, fluid midfield with him playing there now in what he lacks. Not on the ball. On the ball, he's fine, really. It's more off the ball and defending off the ball that I think he lacks the awareness of what's going on around him and things like that. Sure. He seems to refuse to want to play him further up where he lacks that defensive responsibility. Perhaps because I think he prefers, like, if he's not got a creative player like Coutinho in the 10 role, he prefers like Allen or Henderson to do it, who've got the energy to be closing down from the front a bit more, which is fair enough. And he's sort of playing Gerrard like Alonso, really, but he doesn't have that off the ball in defensive kind of positioning that Alonso had and the reading of the game on that side of it. And he hasn't got Mascherano next to him, so you haven't got that really nice balance anymore. You've got Lucas, who's really struggling. And both of them are trying to make up for each other's errors, and they're not particularly good at doing that side of the game. It's just a mess in that middle bit.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I think Phil's going to come on to that later on. Steve Brown, did you have anything else you wanted to add to about the attack at the weekend?
One thing, I think it was Andy that said it yesterday. Suarez just hates Raheem Sterling.
Abuse
he gave Sterling. I
know it looks like it on the pitch, but the two boys will argue. I don't give a shit if somebody's arguing on the pitch. And to be honest with you, Sterling seems to interact most with Suarez on the pitch as well. When you look at most of the passes he did, they were with Suarez. Most of the balls that Suarez fed out to either winger of Moses or Sterling, it was back to Sterling. If they want to have a go at each other on the pitch, fine. That's how some players talk to each other when they're on the pitch. I don't.
Oh, no, I get that. It's just so hard to look at it yesterday. Suarez seemed to be as great as far as he is. Yesterday just seemed to be a day where he decided he was doing it on his own. Mm. It didn't make a difference who was on the pitch. He was doing it by himself. And in fairness, there was one stage, I think it was in the first half, when he was on the ground battling for the ball with three whole players around him and Gerrard and Lucas standing watching. And you're kind of looking at it going, hang on a minute, like,
that was,
what's happening here? Who actually wants to do anything in this game? And it was 1-1 at that stage. Moses was just, it was just a brain dead performance. Like, there's no other way of describing it. I was excited when Moses came in. I thought, okay, he can offer us something a bit different to what we have. A bit more advanced in his development than Sterling. But Mike, yesterday was just ridiculous. There was one stage in the second half where a cross came in and the ball went back post and Moses stood watching the ball. I think it was Figueroa won the header, but Moses just stood watching, didn't even challenge. The minimum requirement for everyone, like, everyone here has played football, everyone has a bad day, but the minimum requirement is effort, and there was just no effort yesterday. There was no urgency throughout the team. Not once did we press hold high. Once Henderson didn't do it, no one done it. Suarez, as I said, just tried to do everything on his own. Moses and Sterling just looked like they had a complete lack of ability.
Is there not a bit to be said for what Dan was referring to there in terms of Suarez looks around, he sees every time Moses gets in the ball, him getting caught in possession, he sees Sterling getting caught in possession, he sees no forward runs past him to give him a little outlet. You can kind of understand him throwing the head a bit, can't you?
Oh, massively, yeah. And look, go back to, if we say for Gerrard, look, remember we had a conversation about Gerrard before, trusting players. Mm-hmm. And I think Suarez, at the end of the day, Suarez is world class. Suarez is a world class footballer. He must have looked at a team yesterday and went, what am I supposed to do? Where is my service coming from? And that's why Suarez decides, I'm doing it myself, because he feels the need that he has to make all his chances on his own, because he hasn't got Coutinho starting beside him. He hasn't got Sturridge that's going to make the space, that's going to give him that gap between Hull's defensive midfielder and their centre backs. It was like, how often would you see Luis Suarez challenging for a long ball in the air? He doesn't, because that's not his game, and he shouldn't have. But yesterday, he kind of needs most with the lack of Sturridge.
Yeah, and the stats yesterday for him are particularly bad, especially with the aerial duels. I think, as you would expect, he won less than half of them or something like that. But there was one stage where he ran from left to right across the front of the box, trying to beat every single player on the pitch and gets away a weak shot, almost just for the sake of doing it, to register some sort of a look. I'm here, you know. We're here. You know,
the only thing was, like, this long ball that came into effect yesterday for some reason, and with Suarez up front on his own, there was times when you kind of looked at it, and fair enough, he's jumping against Curtis Davis and Alex Bruce and Figueroa, but not once did a player gamble, not once did a player believe that Suarez is going to win it. And just for argument's sake, if it was the other way around and it's Sturridge up top or anyone else, or it was Moses or Sterling jumping for the ball, Suarez has gone behind because he's going to gamble on something. Not once. It was so rare that anyone got ahead of Suarez in possession yesterday.
There's no cleverness, no intelligence. No. Phil, you wanted to talk about the midfield.
Yeah, midfield and Rodgers in particular. As Dan had said, like, the midfield doesn't function. And I don't know how many pods I've said it on here that the Lucas Gerrard axis is not an axis. It just doesn't function as a partnership. Lucas seems to lose whatever decent level that he has when he plays alongside Gerrard. As Dan points out in that third goal, he takes up weird positions and he gives away stupid fouls, and he doesn't play as in the way that he has played previously. Gerrard has never been a tactically aware footballer in terms of a central midfielder. He's now 33. He's 34 this year. He's been playing centre midfield since 09-10 for us, and we haven't qualified for the Champions League at that time. But we did when he played in that attacking midfield spot. We go into a game with no Coutinho, and we're missing Sturridge, and he's our third probably best chance of scoring a goal that's on the pitch, and we keep him as far away as possible from the actual goal in terms of where he's playing. Himself, I think John Ritchie posted a tweet today which showed the average field position of the players, and literally our team outside of the back four, their average field position was in the centre circle of the pitch. So it meant Suarez was the most forward advanced player, and he was about 2 yards over the actual centre circle. Everyone else was circling it, and at the very bottom we had where Lucas and Gerrard were basically standing on each other's toes. They aren't affecting the game. They aren't influencing the game. Your centre midfield is there to create tempo. They don't create a tempo. As a pair, they're also very reactive. Neither one of them gets on and forces the game or can dictate the way the game is actually played. So, you know, you want your midfield. Like, I was looking for Gerrard to step in, get the ball, and start either speeding the level of passing up or change the direction of play or something like that. Just change the manner in which we're playing in terms of what you see a centre midfield doing. That takes away from what he is brilliant at, which is what we've seen off the actual free kick. Unfortunately, because he's been played in this position, and Rodgers is playing him in this position, people are now starting to look, oh, it's Stevie G, he's like Beckham, he's coming to the end of his career, and all he's good for is set pieces and crosses. Which, to my mind, if he's that little bit further, he can actually influence the game more and probably get him in his most dangerous position and where he'll do the most damage to other teams, particularly teams like Hull. The Lucas thing is, I'm hoping that Rodgers is looking at this now and he's saying, do you know what, Lucas hasn't come back from this knee injury, that he isn't the same player.
He's been given so much time since the knee.
I know, but he's effective. He'll be effective as a squad player in certain games, particularly in home matches, and maybe if he's playing alongside a player who's a destroyer, he's got a very functional role. He can be an aggressive front-footed central midfielder if you're playing the likes of Arsenal or something, and you need a double sort of defensive pivot in there if you have somebody who's mobile and can get up and down the pitch as well, like a Mascherano alongside him. The problem is that Lucas is not a Mascherano type, and he never will be a Mascherano type, and we're expecting a Mascherano type to be in there because that's what we need alongside Gerrard. You can't have two immobile centre midfield on the pitch. And I was calling them the twin tugboats. I was laughing so much because they actually made they made Tom Huddleston look mobile. To make Tom Huddleston look mobile is almost a magic trick that David Copperfield would be proud of.
Now, Phil, can I just say there, I don't think the defence helped that anyway at all, sitting so deep. And I think during the early exchange of the game, Gerrard did find himself in more advanced positions. But then the space in the midfield was so large that the back four were waiting on Hull so much that Gerrard had to kind of fill in them gaps.
But Andy, what I'm saying is, as the central midfielder, right, he can have the responsibility to step up another 10 yards and bring the defence with him, because the defence have to go to him, right? He's the captain. He can turn around and tell Torre and Skerton. Now, I do think that you've got a point, because I just think
the defence have a responsibility there. And when Agar played against Fulham, he was dictating all that, what was going on in midfield, and he was the one pushing them forward.
But at the same time, the likes of Lucas,
like, the defence can see everything. Gerrard,
I know defence. Yeah, but Gerrard knows where he's standing on the pitch.
But an intelligent and centre midfielder
pulls
the whole team up.
He can see the gap from him to Suarez. Right, he can see the gap. How big the gap actually is, because he visually sees how far he is away from his highest player. Now, all I'm saying is, if you look at a perfect storm, yesterday was a complete perfect storm in terms of the type of performance we're put in. But my biggest worry is we've only played five away games this season. We've only won two away games. Mm. The last time we won an away game was in September. And that we beat Villa and we beat Sunderland. The last away game we won was Sunderland, and I'm looking at it and I'm saying, we've got all these teams that that we've beaten at home to play away. If they look at Hull, they could potentially, in the way that we play and the way that we set up, there's a blueprint there that could potentially stop us.
Brendan Rodgers was out taught yesterday by Steve Bruce.
Tactically,
he was out taught by Steve Bruce.
No, I'm not sure I agree on that, because Bruce all week was expecting Sturridge to play, and that's where this whole five man defence came from, and I think it just worked, you know.
I don't think he tactically outthought Rodgers. I think Rodgers Rodgers outsmarted himself. I think that's more of a valid way of looking at it.
It was the setup with the players he played before was just suicide, really. Yeah. I mean,
I was going to say that what's actually smart about playing Flano on his wrong side, playing Glenn Johnson, who's established that he can do really well, perhaps even better, on the left-hand side, playing two centre halves who, let's face it, aren't the most mobile, playing the two lads who we know in the centre mid need a bit of a dig out. There's so many choices, and then watching it fall apart slowly, especially with Moses, and doing nothing.
Well, after 15 minutes, it was obvious.
The one thing I'll jump in on, right, is, and he'd alluded to in his press conference that he was putting Torre in because he was to solve the aerial threat, right? The best header of the ball that we've seen defensively in the club this season has been Sacco, right? Sacco. So the couple of things that he comes out, sometimes he'd be better off, Andy, as he said before, he'd be better off just saying, "Ah, listen, I completely fucked it up today," or worse to that effect, hold his hands up and not try to excuse the decisions he made. Or if he said, "I left out Sacco purely because I fancy Torre more to deal with this today." The one thing that pisses me off when in playing Skerton, and it's a bit harsh on Skerton, because I know he didn't play well, Andy, and I'm not saying he did, right? But Skerton, as a left centre back, whenever he's played for us as a left centre back, has been a horror show waiting to happen.
You've seen the same with Carragher as well. When Skerton played with Carragher.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. As soon as you put Skerton in as a left centre back, so to think that we spent 17 million on a left centre back, the vice captain of the club is a left centre back, and we go with a chap who was four choice at the start of the season. I don't want to gloss it over, but if it was another manager, if Kenny had done something like that in the last 6 months he was there, people would have been flipping out about it, right? And if Hodgson had done something like that, we would have expected it and we'd have said, yeah, that's a sackable offence. Now, I'm telling you, it's complete idiocy from Rodgers in terms of what he did.
Dan, can I bring you back in here on something that I wanted to talk about, which is this reluctance that I've just mentioned a few minutes ago to make changes. People have said it's a thing. Now, we have seen maybe one or two examples of him trying to influence a game early. Precious few. Yesterday, everybody and their auntie can see that Moses needs to go off the pitch. They can see that the midfield isn't working. Can you explain, or do you have any theory as to why it is that he seems so reluctant to change things up?
To be honest, I've heard a few saying about this, and I don't think he's as bad as Kenny was, because I think
that's a low bar, Dan, isn't it?
I know, well, that was like 80 minutes up clockwork every week.
Dan, he's 61 minutes. You can almost time your stopwatch.
61 and 73.
But all managers have their favourite.
Sorry, Dan,
you were saying.
Rafa had that. I mean, he used to be 60 minutes every single week, and he never, ever, ever made a change at half time, apart from in the European Cup final when he had to.
Yeah.
But after that, he never, ever made a half time change. And we have seen Rodgers make half time changes. I do think he should have done it quicker yesterday, and possibly the game before as well. But I don't think it's one of his... I don't know why he left it on with me. I don't know whether sometimes you think... in the past, when he has brought people off, there was a couple of times last season where he brought people off on 30 minutes, wasn't there? Like, he brought Souza off.
Yeah. There was that once with Souza anyway, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, that's equally weird, because that could destroy a player as well, really, couldn't it? So,
yeah. Well, what about another peculiar call? The thing I mentioned as well about the fullbacks and the deployment of the fullbacks. I mean, I didn't see anything particular being offered by the opposition that would mean that you should play a young kid making his breakthrough in the wrong position, and an established international player who's done really well there in the past in, you know, his preferred position. What was the logic there?
Well, yeah, I think presumably Flanagan did well last week in that position. I don't know why. He's obviously... The only thing I can think of, the only explanation I can think of, is that he just really wants Johnson to play right back at the moment, or play on the right side. It's the only one I can think of, is that that's what he really wants him to do, and he wants him to cut in like he does a little bit there. But, you know, like we said earlier, he's really good on the left, so there's no reason why he couldn't play there. And it is strange to pick Flanagan, who's... I mean, before he played against Arsenal, was... As soon as his name was on the team sheet, he got absolutely trashed on Twitter, and then play him out of position as well, which made people worry even more. And to be fair to him, he's done quite a good job there. So, but it's a strange gamble to take, to play him at left back. It really is. It amused me so much that when they were on, we were on BT Sport, and Michael Owen said that he was the natural choice for left back. Yeah. Obviously getting him confused with Robinson.
Michael Owen obviously also said that Ryan Rooney doesn't miss penalties, and in the graphic it showed that he missed two of his last five.
He's such a special boy in the commentary box.
Michael Drone, I hate the man.
Right,
he didn't make the all-time favourite 11. He never would.
I mean, it's not going.
Wanker.
That's strong. Okay, it seems like it's a perfect time to move on. Does it, Phil, or would you like to talk about anything else? I don't want to cut across you there, Chief. You've got some ideas, like, you want to share.
No.
Well, that's suitably deflating, so we should move on to our previews of Norwich and West Ham, I think. This is supposed to be the 9 points from nine run that would leave us cemented in the upper echelons of the league, holding at bay Manchester's United and City, fending off the threat of Chelsea and keeping Arsenal in our crosshairs. Well, that hasn't happened so far. So, with Chris Hughton's Norwich and Fat Sam Allardyce's West Ham to visit Anfield over the course of the next four days, can Brendan et al. Get back on track? Or are the wheels starting to come off? So I'm going to start again with Andy, because I started with Andy the last time and you spoke about the defence. What do you think the changes are? What does the back line look like for these matches?
Well, hopefully based on the performance the weekend, Rodgers puts a bit of faith in Sacco and brings him in at some stage in one of the games, probably more likely the one at the weekend. And Agar comes back. That's an absolute, you know, I just don't want to see Agar dropped again, unless he makes catastrophic errors like the others. But just the main thing really is just getting Agar back into the team. Hopefully we find Johnson wherever he's hiding. And then a bit of Sacco mightn't go well and miss. I know they say they're two left sided, you know, but they're going to have to. I think long term they're probably the partnership. So.
We had two
righties
at the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. You know, DFC, you see two right-sided players playing all the time, so why not?
Yeah, and you see, look, as far as you can see, then it's not going to be massive changes then, Andy. It's more up to people to step up and actually... I mean, what have you heard about Agar? I've heard various things that either he was crocked or he was a little bit crocked or he was dropped. I mean, what's the likelihood there?
Well, Rodgers only... So I'm only going with what Roger said. Like, you can speculate on what's being said on various social media, but Roger said that he's left him out because he feels Touré was better equipped to deal with
the game. I hadn't seen those calls.
Yeah, he said it before the game.
Okay, very good. Phil, can we get you back in and talk about the midfield and how it might change for the matches coming up?
Yeah, we might sign a whole new midfield.
Okay, excellent.
It's not going to change. We know it's not going to change unless one of them has a leg fall off in training today or tomorrow.
They'll still play.
If they can, do you know, they'll glue on a wooden leg onto him, right? Once it's not his right leg, he'd be like one of those Sabudio players where you just pull him back and let him kick the ball, right? Without him taking throws as well.
But Phil, you see, like, 3 games in a week, do you think that Gerrard, Andy, Henderson and Lucas are going to play all three?
Henderson plays all three.
Honestly, of the three of them, I'd say Henderson is the one that would probably miss out. But I don't think Rodgers will drop Lucas and drop Gerrard, right? I think both of them play, and I think we paid a price at the weekend against West Ham.
I think Henderson probably plays them. I think Gerrard probably plays them, but we might see Allen come in for Lucas in one of the games.
Well, you know where I was going with that, Phil. I mean, I think most of us would agree that those boys are probably cemented for good or bad, and most of us agree that it's bad. But around them, what changes, if any, do you see? Like, I mean, is if Henderson is also a fixture, then, I mean, what do we do? Just sit back and...
Well, continuous fit, according to his press conference today, right? So we revert to the game against Everton, where we'll have continue left-hand side, and we have Henderson right-hand side, and we have Gerrard and Lucas central. And then you have Suarez revert to the Everton game, it wouldn't surprise me to see Allen come in and have Allen and Lucas and Gerrard three central, with sort of Coutinho and Henderson being in around, buzzing in around Suarez. Now, the problem you have there, and it's one that we touched on earlier, and Dan, you can jump in if you want, but it's goals. We're going to have Gerrard, I'll come back to it, right? We're going to have our biggest goal threat in Luis Suarez and our second biggest goal threat, Steven Gerrard. And one is going to be about 60 yards away from the goal.
Well, yeah, Gerrard's not scored from open play since February, so... You know, he's obviously too deep. All his goals have been penalties and not free kicks. So, I say, like you said, I can't see it changing. I can't see. I mean, I'm quite a big defender of Allen, but when you look at all four of them at the minute, there's not a balanced midfield you can build out of any of them. We're just drastically missing one, if not two, players to create like a nice balanced midfield, more so than individuals, just something that fit. I mean, that Mascherano Alonso with Gerrard further up, that was the most perfectly balanced three in the middle that I think any team's ever had in the Premiership. It ticked. I mean, Gerrard and Torres, linked it perfectly, but those three were just so complemented each other well. All of their weaknesses were overtaken by the other one, and all of their strengths were allowed to be at the front. And you can't buy that. I don't think you can even go, well, in theory, this player complements that player like that, because, City would have done it and Chelsea would have done it, and they haven't even got that kind of balance. Yeah. So I think, a lot of it was Rafa's good thinking, and I think a lot of it was just luck. There was no way we knew Mascherano, when we bought him from West Ham, was going to work out as well as he did next to Alonso. There might have been a bit of theory behind it, but it just clicked into place perfectly. And the thing with Gerrard as well is I think Rafa never played him as a central midfielder for a reason. Knows it's, he's not he never played there. He's not clued up to do it without the ball more than anything, and without the ball defensively more than anything. He knew that. He could see that he's not that sort. He's the best version of a typical English player you can get. That's what Gerrard is. So lacking in a technical kind of, now that your continental player has got in spades, because that's how they've been brought up to play, thinking all the time, always, five steps ahead. But he makes up with it in that kind of bombastic,
The Rover stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and he is the best example of that in probably the last decade. He's a stark contrast to like Scholes, for instance, that sort of player. So, it wouldn't have suited him when he was 26 to play in this role he's playing now, I don't think, and it suits him even less now he's 33.
Dan, do you think that it's actually getting to the stage where the managers that have managed Steven Gerrard, that we consider to be top managers, the likes of Benitez, Capello, even Eriksen, never played him in the central midfield, do you think they're actually being proven right now at this stage?
Definitely, I think so. Yeah. I think Rafa was 100% right to even play him on the right-hand side. And to be honest, right now, I know, like we said before, he shouldn't really become our Beckham. And there's probably a... I do agree, I think he's the best finisher in the squad. If he's in the six-yard box, which he never is anymore, one-on-one with a keeper, I think probably even better than... maybe not with Sturridge, you know, maybe, I don't know. But I think he's less likely to miss than Suarez is one-on-one with a keeper. He used to just be... relentless at that, but he's never in that position anymore.
Moses' miss yesterday.
Yeah, and Alan's miss last week.
Yeah, Dan, can I bring in on something there in relation to the midfield? If you're Joe Allen and you don't play against Norwich, and given that Brendan has actually, to be fair to him, shown a certain amount of ruthlessness, even with players that he's picked himself and chosen himself, would you start to get very nervous about your Liverpool future? I mean, I know that sounds a bit dramatic, but, you know, in fairness, when he's not getting a chance and when he's not getting a pick, when things are so bloody awful, if he's not picked against Norwich, he's got to be nervous, right?
I think his career is probably borderline in the balance at the moment, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because he's the sort of player that needs games, because he's a rhythm sort of player, and he needs to be playing week in, week out, and just get that metronome of it ticking over. He's never going to be a flashy player. He's never going to be the guy creating all the chances or the guy doing too much of the Mascherano type defending. He's I know everyone laughs at the Welsh Lavi comparison, but he is that type of player, but obviously nowhere near Xavi is. But in his style, he's the closest you can think of, in the same way you can say Jonjo Shelvey's like Gerrard, but nowhere near as good. It's that kind of... that's what he does, and he needs games and time to get into that. And I really do like the sort of things he does. The miss was horrendous last week. Obviously, there's no defending that. And I think because he's low on confidence anyway, and he's not playing many games, you're going to see those sort of things. He's still a fairly young player. But I think, to be honest, if we had to pick our players now and just add one, and it was a strong, really intelligent defensive midfielder, then I'd probably play him with Allen in the middle and Coutinho as the 10, really, and be swapping Allen and Henderson in and out. But you know, that would be a nice balance for me. Would be a big monstrous DM who's clever, Allen who's mobile and is intelligent, but just the subtle things, just keeping it ticking over, you know, moving, recycling play, being good under pressure, which, to be honest, we didn't have yesterday. Every time it went to a midfielder player list, there's a man on them, it went straight back to the defender again, and it just seemed to get passed around Skirtle and Torre just the whole time, and then it'd go to the right back, and then he'd pass it back again, and it'd go to Lucas, who'd then pass it back. It's like it's not going anywhere, because no one seems comfortable to be closed down on the ball, and Allen can do that, especially when he's on form, which he was, you know, for a small part of his Liverpool career at the beginning.
Yeah, very small part. Yeah, Steve, you wanted to speak about the attack. Is there anything separate from what we've already touched on?
Yeah, I do. I think there's such a massive impact, and I don't think we have seen it yet. I think we've seen it part of it yesterday, is the Sturridge injury. The thing that's happened with Sturridge, with our forward line since Suarez came back from the ban, is not a lot of people appreciate the work that Sturridge does. Sturridge occupies centre-halves, and centre-halves are so afraid of Sturridge, because there is the option where the ball can go over their head, and Sturridge is onto it like a light. So with that in mind, they then drop deeper, which then gives Suarez more space to play, as we said already. I genuinely think, as Andy, you're probably not going to like this shout, but Aspas is going to have to come in if it means accommodating Suarez.
You know, I don't disagree with you too much. Like, they're bare bones at the moment with Sturridge out, and I think Aspas probably will feature in one of the two games. And I wouldn't have a problem with it if he played that formation he played against Fulham, where he puts two up top. Because, Phil, you know, you were banging on about how Aspas can do a job when he's up top. So, why not?
I also said to you, the one thing about Aspas in pre-season was his best run of forms and goals in pre-season came when he played alongside Suarez. The one thing he doesn't have to worry about is a language barrier. And they seem to, even when Suarez didn't give a shite in pre-season, they still seem to link up and have assists and goals between them. So why not?
I think
if he doesn't get a run at this stage,
when is he?
Then himself, he may as well just pack the bags and head back to Spain.
Yeah.
The only issue I have is, like, we can go back. This all comes back around to Brendan Rodgers. At the end of the day, we have a centre forward on loan at Sunderland that costs 10.5 million quid that Rodgers bought.
Yeah, but Stephen, like, there's no point in saying, oh, look, Borini's sitting on the bench at Sunderland.
Yeah, so now, why wouldn't he be sitting on the bench at us?
But what's the point? We sent him off to Sunderland to get games. If he's not getting games there, then you have an issue with the actual player. He's talking about going back to Italy in January now on another loan deal. So to be honest with you, if Borini doesn't have the mental strength or the ability to make it in England, I don't think we need to bring that one in and use it. And I'm the first to get on and say that Rodgers needs to do this and do that and that he got this wrong and that he's making mistakes. But look, I'm not going to dive into Borini. Think Borini was there all last season, and when he did get games, he made very little impact when he came in. So what I'm saying to you is, we signed Iago Aspas to replace Borini in the squad. Now's the chance for Aspas to come in and show if he has the metal that Borini didn't have.
Fair enough, yeah. No, I agree with that, but I also think, add to that as well, the way things seem to be set up at the moment, Alberto looks to me like a better version of what Joe Allen does. Alberto does a similar job. Again, he's coming in from a foreign country, trying to settle, all that kind of crap. But to me, like, it says a lot yesterday that Alberto came on ahead of Joe Allen. Like, Alberto looks like he could be the future. I think the way I would like to see his line up, because I think if Gerrard wants to play, or if Gerrard's going to get picked to play centre midfield, either play him as the most first forward or play him as the deepest. And then give Alberto a run of games and let's see what he can do. At the end of the day, we paid enough money for him. Like, fair enough, he came from Barcelona B team, whatever you might want to say, but he looks such a tidy player compared to what was on the pitch yesterday. It's just...
Yeah, fair enough, Steve. We may be a Liverpool podcast, but we should at least nod at the opposition coming up and what they might offer threat-wise and how we might counter it. So can we start with the Norwich match, and have people been thinking about what it is in particular that we should be looking out for there and how we might counter-attack it? Does anyone want to jump in here?
I've only got a quick observation about West Ham and Norwich in general, is that we're talking about our lack of firepower. Well, Norwich are the worst team in the league out of the bottom three for conceding goals, and West Ham are the best for not conceding goals. So in their relative positions, other than, again, the top three, more or less, give or take one goal or so, but yeah, it's pretty big standout figures at West Ham down in that bottom half have got the best defence, and Norwich have got the worst. So I don't know if that tells us anything, but West Ham's goal difference is only -2, whereas Norwich is -12, and they're next to each other in the table.
Yes, that's can betray us, all right. Phil, you were about to say something there.
Sorry. One of the games, at least play Agger left back. And purely because we don't have a left back at the moment, and the chap can play there. He played it under Kenny, and he played grand there. So why not play him there? And that's no harsh on John Flanagan, because I'd actually play Flanagan in the West Ham match as the right back, because he'll kick the fuck out of Stuart Downing after 2 minutes, and Stuart Downing will disappear out of the game for the rest of the game, as he did for Liverpool, because Stuart Downing doesn't like getting kicked, and that's why I'd play Glenn Flanagan left back, because Glenn Johnson will not. Go and kick him. He'll be too busy having a chat to him, because they're best of buddies, like. And that's the only get Downing out of the game early doors, and fucking set pieces, defend the bastards. Don't be donor heads and fucking do stupid things.
That's proper old school. I like that a lot. And what I'd say to you about your little shout about people scenting blood, I mean, that's what they're going to do, isn't it? Those two teams that are coming up, they saw the game the weekend. They're going to look at us and go, I fancy this.
Allardyce is licking his lips after yesterday.
Absolutely.
The only thing I'd sort of put a bit of perspective on it is, it is one bad game. Every team has bad games, right? And if we go out and do the job against Norwich, then the blood that's West Ham sent at the moment suddenly evaporates ahead of Saturday. So tomorrow, Wednesday night's such a big game in terms of, if we can turn that back around and get a good 3 points with another good win, you know, everything becomes a bit rosier in the garden again.
Absolutely. But I suppose the point is, a lot of people had complacently started thinking about this 9 points and a 9 run, which was a bit fanciful in the first place anyway. I think most of us thought we probably would drop points somewhere unexpectedly, and we've already done that. As you say, it's one game. Maybe we can hopefully get things back on track. Okay, let's move on to our listeners' questions. It's time to look.
What about prediction?
Oh, God. Do we have to do? Oh God! Okay, right. You want to do predictions? But anyway, let's take all the boxes. Andy, predictions.
Yeah, I think there'll be a response, all right, against Norwich. So I think they'll beat Norwich 2-0, 3-0. And I'm about to give a shout for West Ham.
Go ahead, please.
It's a lot of it's going to depend on the Norwich performance, really. A marginal win.
A marginal win, lovely. Dan, can I bring you in here for predictions, please?
Yeah, I think Suarez historically has done really well against Norwich. Loves playing against them, so I think we're going to comfortably beat Norwich, but I think we're going to struggle against West Ham. I don't know what the score's going to be in either, but I'd say a reasonably high scoring game, as in more than winning by more than two goals versus Norwich. But I can. My gut instinct is thinking of a draw against West Ham, but just hope I'm wrong.
Okay, so you're thinking 4 points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Steve.
Suarez is going to get a hat trick on Wednesday night. I think that's a given because it's against Norwich.
Good man.
Then I think Norwich could come and just ride the game off, as in they're in a run of three games where Hughton could have went right. Well, we'll scratch the Liverpool game. So I think we'll beat Norwich comfortably. West Ham, I am worried about. Really think I'm worried. I think West Ham could come and kick us all over the park and just dominate the midfield. And we could probably get a 1-1.
So you're looking at 4 points as well?
Four.
Well, I'm going to go for something similar. I'm not sure which of the matches we'll drop the points in. I'd like to think that we might get two wins. And if we win on Wednesday night, I think we will get two wins. But that's a very, very big if, Phil.
Norwich will win 7-0 and West Ham will win 4-0.
Thank Christ this is over, because I actually really hate that bit of section. Next up is a new feature. It's called Phil and Steve's Magic Transfer Rumour Merry-Go-Round. In our new section, because we're transfer addicts, well, some of us are, Andy isn't, we do a quick run around as many rumours as we can find, and using absolutely no inside knowledge, we wrap up what's believable and what's not. So to start this off, we have Molly on the line. Molly, good evening. Welcome to the Day Trippers. What have you been hearing on the grapevine from the man in the street?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all, right? It's great to be on the show. I'm big fans.
Excellent. Good to have you, man.
Good. There's a few things on the grapevine. It's pretty be a busy January when it comes to ins and outs. I expect at least three to come in and probably three to go out as well in January.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at it from the outside, Jordan Ive, the young lad there, he hasn't had much game time this season. He looks an absolute guarantee to go to Derby County at the moment.
Sure, right, okay.
Yeah, the Freeze, you have Andrew Wisdom there, as you probably know.
Yeah.
With him. The other one is Raheem Sterling, but a deal can be done with some wage issue there. He's on something like $30,000 per week, Sterling.
Yeah.
So a deal can be done, so they looked at Ive and he looks certainly to go off. Sterling himself, he looks like he's gone off on loan as well. He's gone to Brighton and go to Albion, I believe.
Now, come here, Molly, the Ive gig, do they think that that's going to be part of some move for Will Hughes, or is this separate, is that the word? Like, is it separate, or is it seen as being part of, rounded up as part of this deal for Will Hughes?
It's an interesting one, really, because we seem to have a really good relationship with Derby, and when it comes to Will Hughes, I wouldn't expect a January move to be made for him. I would expect that to be more of a summer thing.
Hmm.
With this Ive and Wisdom thing, it's more just to keep our relationships open with Derby and to keep them happy. Like, Will Hughes himself, he has visited Melbourne in the past. You know, we spoke to his agent, his family, all of that, with the permission of Derby, of course. But I don't expect anything to be done in January. I expect that more to be a summer move for himself.
Right. So, and who's favourites to land Sterling at the moment, or is there anybody?
It's Brighton, isn't it? Yeah, Derby wanted, as I said, with the $30,000 per week wages, a deal could not be done there. Mm. I know Swansea were sniffing around, but it seems that Glenn Rogers will further send him off to the Championship, get some game time there, and Brighton looked like the hot favourite to pick him up. Definitely have some attractive football as well, so it might suit him.
Molly, on the sticking with the people going out, do you see any of the more established names heading in that direction as well?
More established names heading back to actually tomorrow night, is it?
No, heading away from the club.
Well, the only room that I've heard recently is actually Martin Kelly. You know, he's had no game time really at all this season because of injury, and they may be sending him out on loan in January. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you know, I don't really see anything else happening there. Aspect is another slight rumour for him going to Valencia in January, but you know, that's only one on the grapevine. But Martin Kelly will be one I'll be looking out for.
So you haven't heard anything around, say, Agger or something like that heading to Barcelona and then Ian Air?
Not in January. Summertime, I would expect both Agger and Johnson both to go. Johnson's contract is running down.
He's
on over 100,000 per week at the moment. They're looking to take a wage cut. That doesn't look like it's going to happen because they want to take like a 50% wage cut.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'd expect him to go in the summer, and more than likely Jagr also.
And come here, right, that's the gloomy bit over. What about who's coming in? Who are we going to be jumping around watching YouTube videos and saying, woohoo, we've got this man coming through the door?
Well, the two big positions at the moment is left back and midfield. Mm-hmm. That's where they're aiming for. Now, we all know about Montoya at Barcelona is a left back position that Aaron Elier has been over there speaking to him, trying to get him in. We do face competition, however, because Inter Milan are interested, Juventus are interested, and the player himself. He hopes to stay at Barcelona, but we're doing our best to get a deal done there.
Mm-hmm.
If Montoya doesn't happen, you'd be looking at people like Ryan Bertrand of Chelsea and Ben Davies of Swansea. But Montoya is the number one target, and that brings us on to the summer as well, because they know he can play right back, and that will allow him to leave Glenn Johnson go in the summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you're on to midfield, and you're looking at Mvilla, who was over, of course, at Goodison. It was all said it was meant to be, he was there because of Sacco, invited him over, and so on and so forth. But from what I heard, there's a deal to be done there. The player himself is eager to join the club. It's just getting to negotiate the fee with Ruben Kazan at the moment is where we're at. But it looks like most certainly there's a deal to be done for Mvilla.
That will be music to a lot of people's ears, especially around the midfield. Listen, Molly, we've got Steve here has been scratching every forum, any piece of newspaper he could find with reason. He's been looking under rocks and the whole lot, and he has a list of names that I don't know whether he dragged them out of his arse or whether he dragged them out of his elbow, but he's definitely got one. Can he throw a few at you just to see if there's
good.
How you doing, Molly? The first one that kind of came out the past couple of days that really interested me was Javier Pastore from PSG.
Yeah, well, we made contact about a month ago regards Pastore to PSG. Now, who basically was, we just wanted to see what his situation was there. Now, PSG, they don't really want to leave any players go in January. And I know we had competition from Rome and so on, but the player himself, he doesn't fancy move back to Italy. Personally, I can't see it happening because it was just basically a contact made as in, well, what's his situation? Where are you at? Would you be interested in selling? We haven't followed up on that yet. He might be one to keep an eye on, but if the Mvilla move doesn't work out in others, he might be one to keep an eye on. But right now, it was just a basic phone call to PSG to see where they were at with him.
Okay, and then another one that has come out as well, another midfielder is Ivan Rakitic from Sevilla.
Yes, I'll be honest, I've heard absolutely nothing of that. I know his name was bandied about in the summer as well as Rakitic. Personally, nothing has come my way regards him.
Yeah. Come here, when these names are being bandied about, like, any word on whether they're looking to do the deals quickly as they did, say, with Sturridge and Coutinho, so that we don't have again another last week of hoping for players to come in and actually our business being done? What's your take on it?
Well, my take is that they're always looking to get the deals done as early as possible. ASAP. But they're complicated deals, especially with someone like Montoya from Barcelona. You know, that's going to be a complicated one. That's why they've started the deal so early and tried to get into negotiations. I know they brought a Pepper in as there as well for a summer move, trying to get that tied in and so on. So yes, they are hoping to get him in, but it's not always that easy.
Molly, with the supposed Montoya deal, do you reckon that there's a possibility that we could do something like Spurs done with Hopi last season, where he actually signed a pre-contract agreement and then went and actually signed for a fee?
That's exactly what we're looking at, is that if you get a pre-contract, first of all, that he comes in the summer and then go back to him and go, well, you know, 5-6 million, we'll take him off our hands now. That's the deal they're looking at doing. But they want him in January, there's no doubt about that.
So you think Montoya is the number one target?
I believe Montoya is the number one target. Previously to that, it was a midfielder, something like Mvilla. I know Matic made a call to Benfica about him as well, but they're looking for crazy money. But because of the injury to Enrique, Sissoko's form hasn't been great. They've already got young Flanagan there. So now Montoya is the number one.
And listen, away from players, do we expect any news on stadiums or anything around sponsorships or anything like that coming up?
Well, that's a great question, because I was speaking to someone recently who had a bit of insight in this, and they were dealing with a company called Orido. This is a Qatar telecommunications company. And what we're looking to do, Orido, was to sponsor a training ground similar to Melwood, sponsor things like the tracks and tops like DHL have with Man United and so on. Now, Billy Hogan is working on that deal at the moment. It's still ongoing. It's a very complicated deal from what I heard, because So I would expect that a deal will be done with Arena or another Qatari group, but it may not be till closer to the end of the season, start of next season.
And come here, any news on Rodgers' deal? Is this five-year deal going to happen, or did they suddenly pull back after the weekend?
You know, this one came up recently with Rodgers' five-year deal. I know he's 18 months left in the contract, but the last I heard on the Rodgers situation is that FSG wasn't 100% happy at the beginning of the season with him. And they were waiting, really, till the end of the season to see where he places. The exact quote I got was, if he doesn't finish in the top four, he's out. So I would expect him to sign any deal till the end of the season.
Good man, that's juicy shit on a Monday night.
Molly, can I just ask you about that whole Rodgers deal? One thing that struck me, do you think it's because we had this little run of success and that people are starting to say, oh, Brendan Rodgers for this job, Brendan Rodgers for that? You're looking at AVB under pressure and people are fancifully talking up Brendan for that job. You're looking at other places and people are saying, well, maybe he could do a job there. Is that where that came out of? Because it seems fanciful, to say the least, doesn't it?
Well, you know, Rodgers is a clever guy at the end of the day, and you can be sure like his agents could be putting stuff out there like that. Yeah. You know, his deal is coming up, and you know, he could be able to get a deal done as soon as possible, because he probably doesn't want to leave till the end of the season. As I said, if he doesn't get in the top four, he's in big trouble. He really is. But I heard, you know, himself in FSG, there's a bit of a shaky ground there. Right. So they're waiting to see till the end of the season. So that could play a factor into it, where he's trying to get the deal done before that actually happens.
And listen, are we going to win tomorrow night?
I hope so. You know, after that hole, I was astounded. No, I couldn't believe it.
I want to know if you have any inside info. Are we going to win tomorrow night?
No, you know, I'd have to make, because I actually Albert tweeted out to, I think it was Tony Waring, one of the guys on Twitter, had sent a message going, oh, we've no storage, no Coutinho, so on and so forth. I'm not looking forward to this whole game. And I said, Tony, it's only Hull. You know, surely we're going to beat Hull, no matter who's missing. And of course, I probably jinxed us at that stage.
Listen, mate, thanks for coming on tonight.
Great, and I look forward to listening to the show.
Thanks, Molly, appreciate it.
All right, cheers, back. Cheers.
Take it easy, mate.
We're going to move on to listeners' questions now. If that's okay, we're going to move on to listeners' questions. I got halfway through my intro, so if it's okay, I'm going to try and get all the way through it this time. This is where we look under the tarpaulin that covers the darkest recesses of our listeners' psyches. Yeah, shut your foot. As we endeavour to answer your query. So, as usual, there's some gems. We're going to start off with Warren Wheely. He's at Warsaw on Twitter, and he asks, I've already got a lad jumping beside me here who wants this one. Oasis or Blur? I like this question. Steve Brown.
At the time, it was Oasis. And this is back in the 90s. It was Oasis, right? But now, when you're removed from that whole Britpop era and you listen back, Blur's music has stood the test of time. Oasis hasn't.
Yeah, it's not musically, it's not even a contest.
No, it's not a contest. But at the time, it was all hyped up by the media, and everyone was, and 90% of people were Oasis fans.
So at the time, you were an Oasis head, basically. Yeah. Yes.
But
yes,
look
yes,
back
yes.
now, and like, I was at the Blur gig there during the summer, and one of the best gigs.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Same as that. Anyone else want to jump in there? Or are you just all
Oasis
Blur for me.
Excellent. I really enjoyed that last few seconds. Right, this is from Owen at Oh The Red, and he says, how the hell did Moses free the Israelites when he couldn't even make a 2-yard pass on Sunday? Very good question, that. Phil Casey.
He did one of those flicks in the Red Sea, and it just parted, and he ran, and they all ran with him. Do you remember that flick? It was wonderful. In the lead to the first goal, it was just this wonderful flick with the outside.
He tried to flick it over his head.
You wouldn't do that in like the fair on the pitch.
You wouldn't do it in a computer game, because it'd be impossible to do it.
And you said he was lacking confidence.
Is either that, or he was wearing one of those really old pair of boots that had sort of the bubble at the front, and he just went to dribble and just popped up in the air. Ah, listen, leave the poor lad alone. No. Moses did well with the tablets.
Yeah, well, in fairness to get, he's got enough to deal with that forehead. I think we should probably just leave him alone. This one's from Gervinho, Peter.
Are you Gervinho in disguise? Come on.
complete knob bugger. This is from Peter at PD123, and he asks, who would win the fight? Patrick Bateman, that's as in American Psycho, or Leon, from, aka the professional from the movie Leon? Anyone got a shout on this?
Leon.
Why?
I've got
a French accent.
Okay, Dan, give me your shout.
Well, it should be Leon, because let's be fair, he could take Patrick Bateman out with a sniper shot from miles away. However, I think Leon is very much of its time, and if he was around nowadays, I think he'd be destroyed by people on Twitter for being a nonce.
Yes,
bringing in a small female, grooming her to be a sniper. It wouldn't last 10 minutes on Twitter these days.
Yeah, it's a worry. In fairness, yeah. So
Patrick Bateman,
you too, Pat. Yeah. Well, in fairness, the kid is good with a chainsaw too, so let's give him that. This one's from our old friend Damien Demo Flood, and this is for all the modern men around the table. And what's your favourite hand cream, Phil Casey?
Kerrygold.
Yeah, I don't want to thought that. Everyone else is avoiding eye contact, so I'm actually. Oh, Jesus, that's fantastic. Steve's just manning up there. Thanks a million, mate. Next one's from Elizabeth. She's at Kills Me Dead, and she asks, what are your favourite holiday baked goods? I'm going to start this off because it has to be mince pies. And if anyone wants to argue with me, then... Actually, I had a big argument on Twitter with a certain doc about mince pies. I think he hates them. I'm a fan. I'm a mince pie fan. So for me, it's mince pies.
Anyone else got the best ones?
My ma does the best mince pies. Yeah,
homemade.
Yeah, homemade. Yeah,
the old lads bakery do serious mince pies.
Yeah, all right. Which, go on, give them a plug.
I don't know the name.
That's a missed opportunity.
You don't know your old man's bakery. No. Sweet Jesus!
Right, just bring some in next week.
I'd go for a pan of chocolate with a chocolate caliente in Barcelona.
Yes, all right.
What a pretentious Oh, what a pretentious now. Right, next one. Beware, slightly football question coming up. I'm going to skip on here a little bit. This is from Carl Kopak at The Sensi on Twitter, and he says, reputation aside, if Liverpool phased out Gerrard, would the midfield improve? Carl has put yes in brackets, so he's kind of leading you down a certain path here.
Are you looking for a one-word answer here?
I'm looking for a short answer.
Is this a whole other podcast?
Well, it gives a short answer. Actually, yeah, I'm looking for a one-word answer. I'm going to get one-word answer from everybody. Would LFC's... midfield improved by phasing out Gerrard? Andy?
No.
Steve?
Yes.
Phil? Dan?
Yes.
The yeses have it. Next one, there are two together here, and I'm going to kind of amalgamate them. One's from Mark Simpson, and one's from Dave Hendrick, and the two of them are kind of similar. They're actually eerily similar. Mark asks about three celebrities, Dave asks about three famous people. So basically they're about having a sort of a soiree or a dinner party or something like that. And you can have three...
Soiree!
Is that soirees, is it? Is that the French
you can have,
version?
You can have three guests at this soiree, and you can rub your Neutrogena into you, and you can have your pan of chocolate, you
Neutrogena twonk.
And anyway, so the bottom line is three guests for your little party. One has to be a politician, one has to be a musician, and one is an actor or actress. So a politician, a musician, actor or actress.
Alive or dead?
Doesn't matter.
I'm saying alive. Has that ruined your shout? No. Oh, go ahead. Be bring them back from the grave. I'll get the ball rolling here with mine, because I'm going to go with politician Berlusconi.
Bunga bunga Christmas party.
My musician's Nick Cave, and my actor is.
For anyone listening, he is wearing a toga with us.
And I always wear a toga. You know this for broadcasting. And my actor would be Mel Gibson, because I think that party is going to get really fucking messy, really quick. There's going to be horrible drunkenness. People will get stabbed. It's my kind of party. Andy, did you have any shouts in this?
No, not so much on politician, musician, but just the part of the question where it was if you had three celebrities.
Three celebs. Okay, go on, let's open
me
it.
And celebrities don't get on too well, and I'll give you a few good examples.
Is there a story there?
Got the really great opportunity to play golf with Ronnie Whelan early on this year, and I had an absolute meltdown. 4 hours walking around Ronnie Whelan, like, couldn't speak, like, I was... couldn't think of a word, like, you know, couldn't talk to him properly, and I just had the most disastrous round of golf ever, which resulted in him on the 17th him saying to me, Andy, are you sure you're not left-handed?
Jesus, that's amazing.
I met Nick, I'm going to mix them up now, but I met Colm Meaney, it was, in a pub around Christmas time 2 years ago, and went over for a photograph and says, oh, Brendan, what's the story? Can I have a photograph with you? I thought it was Brendan Gleeson.
Oh, wow.
Went down like a shite sandwich. And then the very last one, I met Mary Bourne, and it was a pleasure to meet Mary, but I says to her, Mary, like, oh, it's great to meet you. Like, you know, I mean, we've been following your career, and I never forget the first night you were on the TV, and all, we were all watching, and your song was brilliant. I dream as time goes by. That was the other one. So she says, that wasn't fucking me, you tick, yeah.
So basically, you've got three people you would never have at a dinner party.
I don't think they could. Okay.
I don't think there's any chance. Dan, did you have any suggestions for this particular party?
Not politics. I'm going to have to go with just three. I'd like one dead, Bill Hicks.
Yeah,
I'll have Bill Murray because I'm thinking of bills.
Why not? Yeah.
See his Christmas card then.
No, I didn't know.
Google Bill Murray Christmas card.
Oh, I'll have to look at that after this. I don't know, the one I've completely forgotten.
It doesn't matter, you've got Bill Hicks and Bill Murray, you're sorted. Phil, did you have any suggestions?
I'd probably go with... politician... Micheál McDowell.
Right.
Because I just want to ask him a few questions.
That'd end well.
Pseudonymous.
Doesn't it just, yeah?
Singer or musician, Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
And then what was the last one?
Actor. Or actress.
Ernie.
Right. Thanks for taking the question seriously, at least. The rest of the boys mucking about the format completely. Right, last one from the listeners' questions from Craig Hannan. He's at Craig LFC7. And this is again for our Neutrogena loving friend over on the right. I'm going to ask you first, Steve. Are Brendan's teeth getting whiter or is his tan getting darker?
He's definitely on the sunbeds. There's no question about it. He's on the sunbeds or he's nipping in for an L spray tan.
Yeah, cheekbones are looking well this weather as well.
Yeah, he's definitely on the spray tan. It's the tan.
Okay, let's wrap it up then today. A couple of things we need to mention here before we finish up. Thanks again to Astro Park for hosting us yet again. This is Dublin's premier five-a-side venue, so you should check them out at www.astropark.ie. As you mentioned before, YNWA Irish Reds are having a special event on Stevens' Day in the Slorgan Park Hotel. Tickets still available. You can get those at www.irishredstickets.net. And that's us done. God knows how it sounded, but we got through it in one piece. Big thanks to @MollyBTK and his bag of rumours. Thanks also to Dan Shepherd for helping us to dissect what has been and what's about to be. Follow him at Liverpool Deep on the Twitter. I'm sure you already do. He's quality. Your day trippers tonight were Stephen Brown, Andy Young, Phil Casey and myself, Trev Downey. Until next week, careful now and down with that sort of thing.
Bong.